1:13 a.m. on the 23rd of October 2019. Grainy black and white CCTV shows an articulated lorry pulling into a side road, its headlights dazzling the camera lens. The vehicle parks up at the side of the road, and a figure moves round to the back of the lorry. Now he's on a mobile phone.
Hello, caller. Is patient breathing?
Hello. No, I'm a lorry driver, and I just lifted a trailer from the port. I don't think so. There's loads of them. There's immigrants in the back, but they're all lying on the ground.
How many approximately?
I don't know. 25?
25 patients not breathing.
Yeah.
PC Jack Emerson, first responder.
Around 1 in the morning, we had a call out over the radio. We approached the lorry from the front end and drove past it. I think one of the doors was already open, and I've looked over my right shoulder and I could see like steam coming out.
We were the first two cars on scene.
PC Bradley Cohen, a first responder. Now body cam footage from an officer approaching the lorry.
The officer in the other car, he opened the back doors of the trailer.
Jesus Christ.
There was 3 or 4 seconds of just trying to process what you're seeing. It was almost just like silence. There was, no one was saying anything, and no one really knew what to say.
The whole container was full of bodies back to front.
4-9.
Yep. Potentially we're going to have to CPR, isn't it, until confirmed life extinguishment.
The driver just stood there, didn't say a word. He didn't look stressed or flustered.
The time is 1:51. I'm arrested you on suspicion of murder. You don't have to say anything. Mate, Army Defence, if you do not mention when questioning something which you later rely on in court.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Good God, pretty horrific.
Just mind your head, be careful getting down. Okay?
I've been a police officer for over 30 years. I've led a large number of murder investigations. But nothing touched this.
CCTV of the lorry driver sitting on a bunk in a custody cell. Hunting the Essex lorry killers. 8 a.m. Traffic passes over a suspension bridge. Behind some police tape, a white forensic tent next to the lorry.
39 people have been found dead in the back of a lorry in Essex. The victims were discovered at 1:40 this morning. It's not known who they were or where they came from.
The discovery of 39 bodies in the back of a lorry in Essex sparks one of Britain's biggest ever murder investigations. A huge team of detectives and specialists start working on the case. One of their first jobs, identifying who the victims are.
The first thing I needed to do really was just to look in the back of the truck. So one of my colleagues just opened it, maybe a few centimetres, just so I could look in. And the first thing that I did actually was just tears come down my face.
Paul Clark, Scene Evidence Recovery Manager.
I've never seen that many bodies or victims before.
A plan shows the location of the bodies in the trailer.
Before an examination can begin, the lorry must be moved to a secure location.
We needed to really think carefully about who was going to drive the vehicle. So we've got a commercial vehicle unit and one of the guys volunteered, which is no mean feat. Obviously, he knew how many bodies were in the back of that vehicle.
A police car leads the lorry out of the industrial park.
As we went out onto the main road, all the police officers bowed their heads in respect.
The articulated lorry drives out onto a road, following a police car with its blue lights flashing. Photographers and members of the public are lining the street as the red cab pulls its white trailer slowly through the estate.
I was in a van and I drove behind the truck. And as we were driving along, members of the public were stopping and bowing their heads all the way along the route, really. And the instruction was that we wouldn't stop. We'd just go through the red traffic lights and the police would supervise us.
An aerial view of the lorry driving along the motorway, then pulling into an industrial park at 9:15 a.m.
The trailer arrives at a dockside warehouse, 8 hours after the bodies were discovered. And the identification process can begin.
Photos from inside the container show bundles of clothes, some shoes, and a rucksack on the floor.
Most of the people had removed almost all of their clothing. But they didn't have any apparent injuries or decomposition. They looked as if they'd sort of gone to sleep. It was a refrigeration unit, so obviously the initial report said that people had frozen to death, but from what I was seeing, that didn't appear to be the case. There was no condensation inside the truck. It didn't feel particularly cold in there. We had to search people, see if they had any tattoos or any sort of scars. We looked for anything that may be uniquely identifiable. Clothing that they were wearing, jewellery.
A watch, some pills and makeup.
And then the time came to take all of the victims off of the truck.
All day, the delicate process continued. Private ambulances under police escort removing the bodies from the refrigerated container. One by one, post-mortem examinations will be carried out.
Each of the victims did have a forensic post-mortem, and the results of their death were concluded that it was a result of lack of air, essentially, so they suffocated to death.
A sign outside a modern office block reads, "Welcome to Essex Police, Greys. DCI Daniel Stoughton, Senior Investigating Officer."
39 people had died. This was the start of the largest investigation in our force's history. And their justice in my hands. I sat there and thought, wow, am I good enough for this? Yeah. I had Maurice Robinson, the driver of the lorry, in custody. We had to establish whether he was a witness or a suspect.
I turned the corner in the Eastern Avenue. I heard a noise out of the back of the trailer. A rumbling sort of noise. Mm-hmm. And I thought this trailer was empty, so that's why it struck me. So that's whenever I got out and opened the back door.
Sitting in the interview room, he's slightly hunched forwards. He wipes his eyes with the back of his hand.
So you opened the door. I'm sorry to ask this, but what did you see?
They're all out on the floor.
You okay? Take your time.
He didn't come across as a hardened criminal. Clearly, you could see he hadn't been in custody before. I think he generally was in shock as to what had happened and what he was now facing.
It's all right, mate. Do you want some more water?
Please, yeah.
And just to clarify, when you picked the trailer up, as far as you know, it was empty.
Yeah.
With Robinson claiming he had no idea there were people in the trailer he was collecting, detectives start piecing together his movements before he parked up in the industrial estate.
I quite like doing CCTV. I've been the CCTV coordinator for a number of murder investigations. initially were trying to figure out the route of the lorry and how it came to be there. Robinson told us that he picked up the trailer from Purfleet Port.
Purfleet is one of 70 ports along the River Thames, receiving thousands of containers from around the world every day to be picked up by drivers and transported across the UK. To identify Robinson, detectives trawl through footage from dozens of cameras, looking for a red lorry cab pulling a white trailer.
CCTV of the red lorry and white trailer arriving at an industrial park in the port at night. A close-up view shows the driver leaning out of a window.
We looked at the CCTV footage from the ticket office, and you can clearly see Robinson's face. But at one point, you can see his face just drop, and he's clearly asked about the trailer. And something just at that moment just didn't sit right. There's something he's worried about. And then he leaves the port with the trailer and then makes his way to the industrial site.
A map shows the lorry's route to Eastern Avenue.
Luckily, there were a large number of premises with CCTV that showed Mo pulling up in the trailer, getting out of the trailer and walking to the rear of the doors. And you can see him clearly opening the doors, and it has a look in, and then closes them.
Robinson then drives off before returning a few minutes later to the same spot. By the time he calls the emergency services, 23 minutes have passed.
Hello, caller, is patient breathing?
No, I'm a lorry driver and I just lifted a trailer from the port. There's immigrants in the back, but they're all lying on the ground.
Sorry to just backtrack a little bit, and I know it's really difficult for you. You opened the door, you saw what you saw, and got back into the lorry, yeah?
I panicked then, my head just completely went. And I done the loop. It's like you can do a loop back round on yourself, and I just jumped in the lorry and done the loop and came back to where I was beforehand, and then that's when I rung the ambulance then.
Okay, so panicked.
It's an odd thing to do. You've just found 39 dead people in the back of your lorry. So you're going to get back into it and go for a drive. Makes you wonder what was going through his head at the time.
Can I just clarify, what phone is it you have?
The Samsung S8 or 9, I'm not sure.
Do you own any other mobile phones?
No.
When Mo was arrested and came into police custody, he had a Samsung mobile phone, but he also had a Nokia battery in his pocket.
You had an old phone battery?
Yeah.
How come?
Because we lose signal in Denmark.
Denmark?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So I had an old phone.
You mean you'd lose signal with your...
On the phone.
Your smart
phone,
so the old Nokias.
Yeah,
believe it or not, the
signal, you still get it, yeah.
Okay. So where is it?
I threw it away. Whenever this all happened, I panicked. Just freaked out.
Okay. So freaked out because there's stuff on it?
No, freaked out because it just doesn't look good, it's just...
What, you thought we think you're a drug dealer?
Yeah.
He sips from a cup.
It was vital for us to find out where the other half of that battery was, or where the phone was, and what usage that phone had had.
Driving through the night.
You're not naive, you're not a stupid chap. We're going to be looking for it, aren't
we?
The chances are we'll find it. You've seen the movies, we'll get our search teams out and all that sort of thing. We will download it, even if it's broken.
Yeah.
What's going to be on it?
Nothing.
Searching the spot where Robinson parked his lorry, detectives discovered, in a drain, a smashed mobile phone.
And do you have a SIM in that phone?
There wasn't, no.
There was no SIM.
And nearby, a broken SIM card. Both are sent for forensic analysis.
a broken mobile phone and SIM card. A sign reads Gray's Police Station.
While detectives wait for the results of those tests, the team trying to identify the victims needs more manpower. They call on officers from around the country to assist the investigation.
I was asked to undertake the phone work. There were around 50 telephones and maybe another 10 or 15 SIM cards recovered in the back of the lorry. The issue we had is, due to the conditions within the back of the lorry, all of the victims had basically stripped down to their underwear, which had meant that their phones weren't with them. So we didn't know what belonged to who. So it was really a case of going through hundreds of telephone numbers, thousands of gigabytes of data.
As that data is gathered, reports of missing people are coming in from all over the world. And there's evidence that suggests some of the victims could be Chinese.
A photocopy of a young woman's ID card.
This is a ID card that we found in the back of the container. It's in the name of Menling Wang. Her place of birth is listed as Kina, K-I-N-A, which I believe in Greek is China. For all intents and purposes, this was a Chinese citizen living in Greece.
As investigations continue, it's believed the 39 people found dead in the back of a refrigerated lorry in Essex yesterday were Chinese nationals.
At a church in Bow, East London, Father Simon Thang Duc Nguyen is putting on his robes.
When I heard the news on the BBC about, you know, a lorry was found with 39 Chinese bodies, I was very doubting about, you know, the victims who are Chinese. I work with the Vietnamese here, so I knew so well about, you know, their way of escaping, sitting in the lorry to the UK. Not very long time afterwards, you know, the telephone called all the time from the UK, from Vietnam, and they told me that their family members could be among the victims. I told, you know, the police officers, I am very sure all of them, not some of them, but all of them were Vietnamese. At the beginning, you know, the family members, they didn't want to come forward. They're scared because, you know, some of them, they came here without any paper. And if they come forward and the police can tell the Home Office about, you know, their identity, they can be sent back to Vietnam. And then I told the police. The family was very scared. I got the words from the police force that we do not do anything harmful to you. And then I told the family members here, it is okay, you please come forward, no problem.
Framed photos of the victims. D.I. Michelle Stoughton, Family Liaison Coordinator.
Father Simon was a massive breakthrough for us. You know, we'd gone from in the early days of having absolutely no idea of who our victims were to suddenly being in a state where we were getting detail after detail through. And then we started making contact with the families in Vietnam.
In Ha Tinh province, Vietnam, a figure scythes crops in a field. A young boy is sitting on some steps, looking through photos on his phone of a man and woman hugging one another. A 30-something woman, Nguyen T. Hong, says, "We got married in 2010. We'd known each other for 10 years. We had 3 children in 3 years." A photo of her husband, Bui Pan Thang. "We worked on the land and it was hard. We were struggling to give our children a proper education. Many people around here go overseas to find work. We knew people who had already made the journey. We contacted them, and they told us how to go about it. He said, Daddy doesn't want to leave Mummy and the children. Daddy doesn't want to go. But we knew if he didn't go, that family life would always be hard. So we agreed he should go. A photo of the family smiling. The day he left was the 6th of September. He called us all the time. There were days he called 10 times. He said, Daddy just needs to see Mummy and the kids. He didn't go straight to the UK. He went to Germany first. He couldn't find work in Germany. Then people said he should go to the UK, so he decided he would. She looks tearful and struggles to contain her emotions. At the police station, a monitor showing CCTV of the lorry.
Detectives are still trying to get to the bottom of what Maurice Robinson did in the 23 minutes between discovering the bodies and calling an ambulance, and who he may have called from his discarded phone.
So, we know that you drove round because you were in a panic, you said, and then you called ambulance from your phone?
Yeah.
Did you call anyone else?
My boss.
And what's your boss's name?
Ronan Hughes.
So Ronan may be able to tell us what the plans were.
Maybe.
Didn't ring or speak to anyone else at all?
No.
He shakes his head. An image of the broken mobile.
People seem to think that when they take a SIM card out of a mobile phone, that's it. You see on the movies, they take the SIM cards out or they break the phone. But you can recover a lot of data.
Call data obtained from the telephone number of the SIM card confirmed that Robinson did call his boss, Ronan Hughes. But it also reveals he called another number.
A view across the water at Tilbury.
That number is traced to Tilbury, another port up the coast from Purfleet. The data not only reveals the shop where the phone was topped up, but the exact moment when the transaction took place.
CCTV from within the shop shows a bald, middle-aged man standing at the counter.
The CCTV image was just perfect. He walked under the camera. We're able to put a face to the person topping up the phone, who was the person who had conversations at the time the bodies were first discovered with Robinson.
Robinson is sitting in an interview room.
With evidence mounting, Robinson decides to change tack.
At this stage, my client, Mr. Robinson, will be exercising his right to silence.
Okay. We know the call to ambulance running at 1:36.
No comment.
How did you phone ambulance?
No comment.
Did you phone it from your mobile phone?
No comment.
Okay, or did you use the mobile phone that was you broke up?
No comment.
What were you thinking in that cab?
No comment.
Did you go straight back to the cab?
No comment.
Did you run off?
No comment.
Just, try and help us here to understand. Is it a case that you sat there in the cab thinking, what am I going to do?
Can I speak to the solicitor for?
Yes, of course you can.
Of course you can, yeah. We'll stop the interview.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a continuation of the interview that stopped for consultation.
My client and I have been in consultation and those are prepared today.
Okay.
I'm Maurice Robinson. Date of birth, 9th of September 1994, will say as follows. I was made aware that the trailer I had to collect had people inside. I was told where to drop off the people. After collecting the trailer, I wanted to make sure that the people inside were comfortable. So I stopped on Eastern Avenue, about 5 to 6 minutes drive. I opened the back door of the trailer, expecting to see people alive, but I saw a group of bodies on the floor. I was in a state of panic and did not know what to do, so I drove around for several minutes in a state of shock. I called an ambulance and waited for them to arrive. I'm absolutely devastated for the poor people who have died and their families. I'm very concerned for the safety of my family and myself if the organisers find out what has happened since my arrest.
That admission from Robinson suggests he's part of a larger organised criminal gang.
This wasn't just a random crime, you know, to gather 39 people from a different country and to bring them in on a container. It takes some considerable organisation.
Detectives suspect that gang includes the unknown man in the shop and Robinson's boss, Ronan Hughes.
We are continuing to appeal for information into the whereabouts of 40-year-old Ronan Hughes. Ronan, hand yourselves in to the police service of Northern Ireland.
We discovered that Ronan Hughes had a haulage company in Northern Ireland. It's a very different policing landscape over there. Hugely different communities, hugely different areas of risk.
County Armagh, Northern Ireland.
Despite the police appeal, Ronan Hughes is on the run. Essex police turn to their Northern Irish counterparts for help. And it turns out, Hughes is already in their sights.
I had an investigation into the importation of Class A drugs, cocaine and heroin, into Northern Ireland. I knew that heavy goods vehicles were being used to facilitate that smuggling. And I immediately recognised that lorry as being part of the investigation. And it became apparent that the lorry had been sold on some months before to Ronan Hughes. We started to get a picture very quickly about Ronan Hughes. He had a small haulage business based along the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. He was hiding his smuggling activities by doing legitimate work. And all he wanted was that legitimate load so that he could cover his movements, so that he could smuggle whatever it happened to be that he was smuggling. I became absolutely obsessed with catching Hughes.
DCI Ricky Thornton of the Northern Ireland Police Service.
Armed with the latest intelligence, officers go looking for Hughes.
We had got the exact address of his transport company, where we believed he was at the time. We had our search warrant, we had our grounds to arrest Ronan Hughes. We raced down to this business address associated to Ronan Hughes. But unfortunately, it was a post box attached to a tree. I was standing there in the middle of the night staring at a post box attached to a tree. The post box itself was the address of his haulage company. He wasn't there, obviously, and he was had made good his escape across the border where we legally couldn't put hands on him.
Several Vietnamese families have told the BBC they fear their relatives could be among the 39 people found dead in a refrigerated lorry in Essex. One of them is 26-year-old Pham Cha My.
When you go through someone's mobile phone, you're really taking a window into their life. You can really start to get the sense of a person and some of their dreams and aspirations. You read in the press and you talk about, you know, it's migrants, it's these terms that, you know, almost dehumanise people. And then you see just someone's ordinary pictures and messages to one another. You know, you see that and it's, you know, that'll stay with you.
A photo of Pham Thi Tra My, a woman in her mid-20s. Tra My only had three or four female friends. All of them got married. Tra My was different. She didn't want that. My husband and I expected her to stay home and get married. She lied to me that a fortune teller told her she couldn't get married yet, and she would only be happy if she got married after she turned 30. The day she left was just a normal day. She said goodbye to Mummy and Daddy as usual. She hoped to work overseas for a few years and then come home. It took her 10 days to go from Vietnam to China, and another 1 to 2 days from China to France. She went there by aeroplane, so it was fast. Then she called us to say she had arrived safely. We had to transfer the money when she got there. The total we transferred to them for Tra My to get to France was $22,000. We knew she was going to travel onwards, but we didn't know what means of transportation would be used. We only knew she would be traveling in VIP class. I had no idea what VIP class meant. Only now do I know what it is to travel in VIP class. An aerial view of a blue lorry with a long white trailer speeding along a road flanked by fields.
With Robinson refusing to comment further in interview, the trailer that carried the migrants into the UK becomes the focus of the investigation. Analysis of shipping records shows that it was dropped off at the Belgian port of Zeebrugge the night before the bodies were discovered.
We knew the trailer had come unaccompanied from Belgium. We need to know who that driver was who dropped off the trailer at Zeebrugge port. The CCTV from the port showed a blue cabbed lorry bringing a white trailer in. Although we couldn't see who the driver was, we could clearly follow this lorry making its way through Zeebrugge port to the parking area. And then we had that cab, that blue cab, leaving Zeebrugge port.
At 3:52 p.m., the trailer with its cargo of 39 people is loaded onto the ferry.
CCTV of the lorry being reversed onto the boat.
The driver of the cab is identified as 23-year-old Eamon Harrison, also from Northern Ireland. He joins Ronan Hughes and the unknown man from the shop as the investigation's main suspects. And a Europe-wide search is launched for all three.
A sign reads, "Welcome to Essex Police, Greys." Photos of the victims are laid out. D.I. Michelle Stoughton, the family liaison coordinator.
By the 7th of November, the coroner had agreed all 39 identifications for us. And to be in a position where we were then able to contact the families and confirm to them that sadly their loved one had been formally identified, you know, it's a relief. Because ultimately that's all the families wanted, was to know for sure and to have their loved ones home with them.
The names and faces of the 39 victims.
Men, 8 women, and 2 15-year-old boys are officially confirmed dead.
One by one, the names and faces of the victims appear in rows.
The story of 39 victims, it is not the beginning. It is the continuation of the Vietnamese leaving their home country.
File footage of people crammed onto small boats navigating choppy waters.
More than 500,000 Vietnamese people, they died on the open sea. I myself also a refugee and escaped from Vietnam in 1983, also on the boat. No one wants to leave. But you have to go to help your family.
The lorry continues speeding along the road.
For decades, that migration of people has proved lucrative for smugglers. Today, the business is controlled by a global network of criminal gangs, which is what Essex police think they are dealing with. And at its heart, the unknown man that Robinson called after he found the bodies.
Nick Hampson, an intelligence officer, is studying CCTV.
So the first thing we tried to do was to see if we had an image of this gentleman within kind of our own kind of policing computers. One of the analysts actually ran some facial recognition, but on this occasion, because of the angle of the CCTV, we just didn't get any hits back.
The image is then sent to intelligence teams across the UK. And within 2 days, an email is received.
An email reads, official, sensitive. I think you need to look at this guy.
They uncovered the name of Romanian national, Georgi Nica. I could kind of feel my pulse going. He was another haulier who had quite a fierce reputation within the industry. He was potentially that link between people who run the facilitations on the continent and the drivers that they're utilising to get into the UK. Georgi Nica certainly had some kind of footprint in Europe, and he was obviously kind of part of the bigger picture.
Nika's involvement suggests a Europe-wide operation. Tracking his movements reveals he flew into Romania the day the 39 victims were discovered. And like the other suspects, is out of reach in Europe.
Mugshots of the three suspects.
Building the case to extradite them is hampered by the lack of hard evidence. So a forensic eye is turned on Harrison's lorry.
I knew that it had a GPS tracker on it. And from that, I was able to show quite a detailed route of where he went. Harrison appeared to have made a lengthy journey to a place called Bienne in France, where he stopped for a short period of time.
A satellite view of Bienne.
We were able to share the data with the French investigators, and they identified an industrial estate where the lorry had gone to.
The day before the victims were discovered in the UK, a convoy of three black taxis is seen turning into the industrial estate in Bienne.
CCTV footage of the taxis.
Moments later, Harrison's lorry follows. It parks up next to a farmhouse, and 8 minutes later, drives off again. Detectives suspect that during those 8 minutes, the Vietnamese got out of the taxis and onto the truck. But with no images, they can't prove it.
A woman walks down a country lane towards an old barn.
Then, they have a stroke of luck.
The middle-aged woman says, the day began like any other. I work as a carer. The lady I care for told me that a lorry had just driven past. I thought that was strange. This is a tiny country lane. No one ever drives down here. And then a grey Mercedes van pulled up with a taxi sign on top, and nine people got out who ran across the road to hide in this barn.
Et de ce véhicule est descendu neuf personnes qui ont traversé la rue en courant pour venir se réfugier dans la grange.
She continues, they were hiding there. She points towards a darkened corner of the barn near the entrance. They were like this, as if they were waiting for someone. And then my patient said, look, the lorry's back. It's a white refrigerated lorry. We saw one of the back doors open. The people rushed into the trailer, and the lorry drove off barely 5 minutes after the taxi had arrived. A 60-something man in a smart white polo shirt says, "It took long a year to get to France." An image of Nguyen Dinh Long standing in front of the Eiffel Tower. In Vietnamese fields, figures are collecting crops using wooden tools. From Vietnam, he went to Russia and then Ukraine. Then he went to Germany for a couple of days and then on to France. Mostly he worked for Vietnamese people. He worked, ate and slept in the restaurants. The sun hangs low over a town. He wanted to go and work overseas to earn money for the family to make our lives better. Cows in a paddock are being fed straw. He came to me and asked, "Will you let me go?" I said it was a decision for the whole family to make. A woman shakes a bowl of cattle feed. "I borrowed money from the banks and I borrowed from my relatives. Some of them sold their cows and buffaloes and lent us that money. Long promised that if he found work overseas, he would make enough money to pay off the loans." He said, "Don't worry." He was very confident about it. An image of Long standing in front of the Sacré-Cœur. Now a reconstruction of the lorry on its journey.
Suspecting this may not be the first time Hughes's fleet of lorries have been used to smuggle people, detectives seize another of his trailers for forensic testing.
An image of a fingerprint.
What they discover blows the case open. A fingerprint belonging to another Vietnamese migrant who arrived in the UK sometime before the 39 died.
That for me was really, it was gold dust. The witness was extremely fearful and they would not give evidence without a high level of protection. And from that point, they became known as Witness X.
Despite fears for his safety, Witness X agrees to cooperate with police and gives them a full account of being smuggled in one of Ronan Hughes's lorries.
"I believe that the people involved in bringing Vietnamese people into the UK are like the mafia. They are organized criminal. They are very dangerous. I fear if they know that I am providing the police information, that they will harm my family in Vietnam."
An actor's voice.
"In February 2019, I got a flight from Vietnam to Poland and then decided to move to France. I made contact with a man who could arrange travel into the UK. I was told that it would cost £13,000. He provided me with an address near to Paris that I should go to. And then some taxis arrived to take us on our journey."
Driving on an empty motorway.
"We drove for a few hours. We stopped at an area near to an industrial unit. We were all told to go and hide in the crop field."
A lorry with its blue cab and white trailer parked beside a farm building.
"And then a large lorry stopped near to where we were hiding. The driver then helped all of us to get into the back of the lorry."
Seen from inside, the trailer door is closed, then locked. Water moving in a bottle.
"I could feel the lorry start to move. There were no light in the back of the lorry. There was a bucket in the corner for going to the toilet."
In the dim light, a mobile phone on the floor is visible, then a plastic tub sitting beside a packet of biscuits.
"The journey across the channel took around 8 hours. Some of the people in the container go to sleep. I didn't. I stayed awake the whole journey.
The trailer rocks gently from side to side as it continues on its way. Now, at a stop, the door opens.
It's around 9 or 10 a.m. when the door of the container are opened, and we see daylight for the first time.
DC Martin Brown.
X gave a voice to the victims that the rest of the evidence just couldn't give. Because we could never hear from the victims themselves. It would only have ever been speculation. His journey was exactly the same as the journey of the 39, except for one detail. X explains there were 15 people in the container that he travelled across in. Half the number of people. And crucially, X's account showed us that the drivers were fully aware that there were people in the trailer.
CCTV footage of Robinson sitting on a bunk in his cell, reading a book.
X's account also gives detectives a description of a drop-off point. A farm, 8 miles from Purfleet Docks. And when they check CCTV, they find something unexpected.
A lorry with red cab and white trailer drives past.
Amazingly, on the CCTV, we had a red lorry with a white trailer and a convoy of 4 cars, including Nika and Ronan Hughes in their own cars as well, making a little convoy past to the drop-off point where people being brought into the country were being taken out the back of the lorry and put into different cars, and then them driving out in a convoy on the way out as well. Just priceless.
Tracking other journeys the lorry made, detectives are led to a local hotel, where they find the evidence they've been waiting for.
Hotel CCTV footage of Robinson and Hughes, then Nika.
All three suspects together in one place.
Robinson and Ronan Hughes were there already, having a drink. It was about midnight or 1 in the morning. And then Nika turns up and is carrying a black holdall.
Nika follows Robinson.
He then is greeted by Hughes and they then go upstairs. And they go to Hughes' room and they're out of view for quite a few minutes, I think about 14 minutes, I think. And then they come back out again. That bag looked a little more empty than it did when it went in. I suspect there was money inside that bag.
Hughes and Nika emerge from a lift.
It's the final piece of the puzzle. It means the team now has evidence tracking people and money from Vietnam through mainland Europe and into the UK. With each person paying £13,000, the operation was netting nearly £500,000 for the gang.
First charge is manslaughter on the 23rd October 2019 at Grays in the county of Essex. Second charge is manslaughter.
Morris Robinson is charged with 39 separate counts of manslaughter. And there's now enough evidence to charge the other three suspects. Eamon Harrison and Ronan Hughes are extradited from the Republic of Ireland. And Georgie Nika is caught at Frankfurt Airport.
Nika was a big part of this crime group. I'm quite certain that he thought he was somewhat untouchable. And we proved him wrong.
A view across water to distant pylons.
Despite charging their suspects, detectives still have one unanswered question. Exactly where on the journey did the victims die? Answering that will determine whether the trial takes place in a British or European court.
We knew there was a refrigerated trailer. There was a data recorder fitted to the side of that lorry that took temperature readings. The data showed that
after the victims boarded that trailer from Bien, after they were locked in by Harrison, the temperature slowly began to rise. We know that when the lorry set off from the pickup point heading towards Ibruga, the temperature was 12 degrees. By 11:30, the temperature had gone up to 21 degrees. At 1:05, Harrison pulls into a petrol station in Zeebrugge. At that point, the victims outside are sitting in a trailer which is now 25.2 degrees. By the time he's reversing the trailer into the parking bay at Zeebrugge Port, the temperature is 27 degrees. At 3:36, the ship leaves Zeebrugge Port, 36 minutes behind schedule. At 6:25, the trailer temperature has risen to almost 35 degrees. At 8:02, the last message was recorded on the victim's phone.
There were some recordings that were found on one of the devices whereby one of the victims had decided to use his phone to record himself using the video camera on his phone to record his message to his family. Because we could confirm the time that that recording was made, we were able to confirm that he, and it was quite evident from the noise in the background, that there were still at least some other people alive at that time.
A series of messages. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I have to go now. I'm sorry. It's all my fault.
The temperature reached its peak was 38.5 degrees. Between 9:42 and 9:52.
Another series of messages. It's Tuan. I'm sorry. I cannot take care of you. I cannot breathe. Have a good life.
And then the temperature slowly started to decrease. And the messages stopped. And the temperature dropped. One by one, they were dying.
The route of the ship on a satellite map.
With twice as many people loaded onto the lorry as usual, the oxygen was running out as the trailer crossed the channel. And all 39 died in British waters.
The blue line indicating the route of the ship crosses into UK territorial waters before continuing to land. Of Nguyen, his last call was on the evening of the 21st. The next day I kept calling him, but I couldn't reach him, so I thought he must have already left. On October the 24th, I woke up and got the children ready for school. While I was waiting for them to get dressed, I was browsing on my phone. As I scrolled, I saw that some people had died in a lorry, and I thought he might have been on that journey. Struggling to contain her emotions, she wipes her eyes. The phone rang. They said Long had been travelling to England. The middle-aged man continues. He was in a vehicle that got in an accident, and everyone inside had passed away. Gesturing, he says, I threw my phone. I'd lost my son. I'd lost everything. A photo of Tra Mi. Her text message is still in my phone, but I don't dare to look at it. I haven't dared to look at it ever since. Only my husband and sons are able to. I don't dare to look at her pictures even once. A series of messages in Vietnamese displayed on a mobile phone. I'm really, really sorry, Mum and Dad. My trip to a foreign land has failed. Mummy, I still love you so much. I'm dying because I can't breathe. Mum, I'm sorry. Voice call unanswered. The 21st of December 2020. Ashen skies over London.
Four men have gone on trial at the Old Bailey in connection with the deaths of 39 Vietnamese migrants who were found in a lorry trailer in Essex last year.
There was a massive expectation when we were coming towards the trial. We couldn't fail the victims, we couldn't fail the families who were waiting for their justice. The promise that we gave at the beginning was that we would get justice.
After an 11-week trial, the jury retires to consider its verdict.
A policeman standing outside the Old Bailey.
The deliberation takes a whole week. When they return, they find the four suspects guilty of all 39 counts of manslaughter. Morris Robinson is sentenced to 13 years. Eamon Harrison gets 18 years. And as ringleaders, Ronan Hughes receives 20 years and Georgie Nika, 27 years.
Four more people were convicted for their part in the smuggling operation. They were sentenced to a total of 14 and a half years. DCI Stoughton addresses the press outside the courthouse.
Good afternoon. Every man, woman and child that died in that trailer was following the false promise of a better life abroad. They put their trust in people who promised to deliver them safely to our shores. And of course, we now know that that trust was betrayed.
DCI Stoughton's on a bridge.
This has been such a journey, physically and emotionally. I had some periods of time where I found myself in a real dark place. My time's done now, I think, on this type of inquiry. I took the decision that this would be my last investigation, homicide investigation.
In Vietnam, a throng of people are gathered as a coffin marked with a label in English that reads, "Human remains, handle with care," is carried through a crowd. Trami's mum. At the moment, we still owe $22,000. We can't make plans. We have no dreams. We just try and earn and save what we can to pay the interest from our loans. A boy looking at photos on a phone. Of Nguyen. The kids miss their dad. The younger child wants to play piggyback with him again. A photo of Bui Pan Thang with his two daughters and smiling son. There are times when I feel like giving up, but then I look at my children. They have already lost their dad. They couldn't live without their mother. I have to keep going. Approximately 70,000 migrants are smuggled into the UK illegally each year, many by organised crime groups. The police are now working with the haulage industry to implement safety changes to prevent future deaths.